Okay, so this I'm on two different halacha chats, the men's and the women's, and they certainly expose a lot of people's misunderstandings. Let's not call it ignorance. There's a lot to know. Halacha is not easy, and what we take for granted, but a lot of misconceptions are certainly revealed and exposed on these various chats. So different times of year, questions get repeated. Now with the chat, it's able to really, you know, answer 200 people with one answer. But before the chats, I would get the same questions over and over and over again. And this time of year, Sfiras Omer is one of those times where I start getting questions in about saying Shechiyanu during Sfiras Omer. Are you allowed to? Are you allowed to buy new things and suits and houses and cars? This all gets repeated. So I want to go through a series of halachas that are misconceptions. Now, I'm sure there's a lot more on this list that I did not include. I just tried to rack my brain a little bit. Last week was a busy week, so I just put down a few on the page here to go through some examples. Now, each time period, each tkufa of the year, Yontif in particular, so I come home to my house, it's a Friday night or the first night of Yontif, and I'll say to my family, trying to guess what the most popular Shiloh was this time period. So that's, you know, Chol HaMoed, right before Chol HaMoed or on Chol HaMoed, the most popular question is, women ask, are you allowed to get a manicure on Chol HaMoed? That's the most popular usually. So what, men do not ask that. Men might want to know the answer to that for themselves, but they don't admit. So that's one, that's the popular question. Another example, Erev Tavshilin. So when there's Erev Tavshilin, so there's always a few people who are lucky not to have to cook at all on the on Shabbos. Mm-hmm. They're going out for meals. So do they have to make an Erev Tavshilin for the Yontif leading into Shabbos since they're not doing any cooking? That's also a very popular question when there's an Erev Tavshilin. The answer to that's not a misconception. They just want to know the halacha. So the answer to that is, yes, the halacha is that one should make Erev Tavshilin because they're lighting a candle. But the practice is if they really don't plan to cook anything, they shouldn't say a bracha. So these are different times of year where there are certain popular questions that come up. So this tkufa of Sfiras Omer is always, are you allowed to buy new things? Are you allowed to say a Shechiyanu during Sfiras Omer? Now, some of these misconceptions have zero basis. Sometimes we could explain where this misconception came from. And sometimes there's a daya that maybe holds such a way. So let's take a look first at Sfiras Omer, saying Shechiyanu, buying new things during Sfiras Omer. We'll go to another 7-8 different examples of misconceptions. So look at number one, look inside at the Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah, this is on the halachas of Sfiras Omer. It's found in Simen Tov Sadi Gimel. So the Shulchan Aruch there is describing that we know during Sfira, the two things that one's not allowed to do during Sfira, you can't get haircuts, nor can you dance and music as one category. So then the Shulchan Aruch says, the reason is because these are days of, he writes here, I'm just looking for the Nusach, he says, Mipnei Shuvos Zman Mesu Tamidei Rabbi Akiva. These are the days at which the Talmidim, 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva died, and therefore we don't get haircuts because of Avelis, and we don't dance and sing and hear music either. So says the Mishnah Berurah, number one, Rota Lomar, Ve'ein Roy Laharbos B'Simcha, it's inappropriate to have increased amount of simchas. We don't have weddings, and nowadays everyone has weddings. The sphere is completely abolished nowadays. Everyone's having weddings and bar mitzvahs and singing, but So... So vain roy larbos besimcha. We shouldn't have increased amounts of simcha. Right? That last Sunday was a crazy Sunday. We had like Baruch Hashem three simchas, are good things. But like I was in Lawrence and back to in Jersey and then back to Queens and then back to Queens again, another place. So Baruch Hashem a busy day. But Rosh Chodesh it was. So anyways, so a person should not increase the amount of simcha during Sfiras Omer. Says the Mishnah Berurah further. If a person is nizdamilo, that means if he chances on an opportunity to say a Shechiyanu, he should say the Shechiyanu. So the question becomes, the Mishnah Berurah sounds like only im nizdamin, if he has an opportunity, but he shouldn't seek for these opportunities, he shouldn't go out and look for these opportunities. So Chaim Kanievsky says the Mishnah Berurah doesn't mean dafka, only nizdamin. In general, we don't look for Shechiyanus. on a random Tuesday in, I don't know, August isn't a good example because that could be during 3 weeks, but on a random day of the year, we don't look for Shehecheyanu. If you happen to need a new suit, you buy a new suit, go ahead and say a Shehecheyanu. So here as well, Mishnah Berurah says, if you happen to need a new suit, so don't hold back and buy a new suit, say a Shehecheyanu. If you see a new fruit, say a Shehecheyanu. There's no reason to hold back on anything. Shehecheyanu is completely permitted. So the Piskei Tshuvos talks about this misconception. Piskei Tshuvos, those who are not familiar, it's a Chassidish Poskim who quotes from a number of different Poskim throughout the gamut, the Litvish Poskim, the Chassidish Poskim. He's still alive. He's a contemporary right now. So he says, Bahar Bekihilos Nispashet, it's been accepted, Haminog She'ein Mevarchen Shehecheyanu Bimei Sfiras Omer. It's been accepted that people don't say Shehecheyanu. Why has it been accepted? The Mishnah Berurah clearly says you can say Shehecheyanu. So he quotes here, "V'yesh shekasu." There are those who write, "She'ein laze mekor b'poskim ve'ein tam le'eser." There is no basis. There's no source. There is no reason for this. He quotes in the bottom, "Tshuvos levushe Mordechai." He quotes the Rav Avadia Yosef, the Kaf HaChaim. He says, "Why does such a minhag establish? Because people get confused with the 3 weeks." 3 weeks, there is a halacha. It's brought down that we don't say a Shehecheyanu, with the exception of the Gra, who we discussed last week, right? Shehecheyanu we discussed last week, I think. He allows one to say a Shehecheyanu during the 3 weeks. We paskin that one should not say a Shehecheyanu during the 3 weeks. And people get confused, the Avelis of 3 weeks and the Avelis of Sfiras Omer, so then they got confused and thought not to say a Shehecheyanu during the Sfiras Omer as well, but they are incorrect. It's a big misconception. That being said, however,
I think because of the numbers, 3 weeks, 9 days, counting, I think that's how people get confused.
Yeah, you don't count during the 3 weeks. No, the different number of days.
No, just the numbers.
I think it's Avelis. I think it's just period of Avelis. That's simple. You don't listen to music during 3 weeks. Don't listen to music during Sfiras Omer. No, I'll add to that one as well. People always ask the question, not nowadays, but when people used to watch movies, or at least admitted they watched movies, they wanted to know, are you allowed to go to movies during the 3 weeks and during Sfiras Omer? That is also a misconception. There's no problem going to movies. There's no problem during Sfiras Omer. Going to movies is another shot. No hashkafa questions, assuming everything's a tanua, whatever. Is it going to a nice scientific documentary? Whatever you're watching, it's all good. But can you go during Sphere? Can you go during the 3 weeks? There's no problem in seeing a kosher movie during the 3 weeks or during the Sphere Omer. Or going to a ball game. Are you allowed to go to a ball game? That was also a very common shiloh. Going to an event where there's music in the background, that's also, you're allowed to go. Don't go to a musical event. Don't go to a musical show on Broadway. If you're going to a Yankee game and they're busy playing Cotton Eye Joe, any other, right? That's what they used to play. Still play that, right?
Yeah.
During the seventh inning stretch? Am I good on that one? Yeah, still do that? Okay. So playing Cotton Eye Joe, you don't have to like run out and like escape. You're watching the Yankee game, and there happens to be a nice song that gets you excited. But that's not a problem. But that's where the custom really developed of people confusing between the 3 weeks and Sfiras Omer. And you're allowed to say Shehecheyanu during Sfiras Omer. But he does quote here, there actually is a basis. He says there is a basis in the Svarm HaKadmonim not to say a Shehecheyanu. He quotes from the Rabbeinu Yerucham, who is one of the Rishonim. I think I mentioned this last week. I can't remember where I mentioned things. But I'll say it again. Rabbeinu Yerucham was one of the great Rishonim. And Beis Yosef oftentimes quotes him. If you try to find Rabbeinu Yerucham, unlikely you find him in any Beis Medrash, the Sefer. Maybe one nice Otzer of Svarim. You might find the Rabbeinu Yerucham, but you're going to open up the Sefer. It's going to have the oldest print of Hebrew you can imagine. You ever look inside like a Ritva or any Rishon, they show you like what it looks like, the actual Ksav, and then they reprint it. So you can't read, you have no idea what letters are even being used. Rabbeinu Yerucham's Svarim that are available out there have that same lettering where you can't make out what the letters, what the words are. Why is that? I'm not sure why, but supposedly any time a person tried publishing, republishing the Rabbeinu Yerucham, they were unsuccessful. Something got burnt, the printing press broke, nothing ever worked, so we only have the old ksav of Rabbeinu Yerucham. But Rabbeinu Yerucham was one of the great Rishonim, and he said that there's a practice not to say Shehecheyanu during Sfiras Omer. The Leket Yoshar, who is the Talmud of Trumas Hadeshim. Trumas Hadeshim was one of the later Rishonim. Trumas Hadeshim is a fascinating number of Shilas. He has a Shailas and Shuvos of the Trumas Hadeshim. He actually wrote his own Shilas and Shuvos. He wasn't sent questions. He thought of interesting questions, and he wrote them. One interesting one that comes to mind, which I really very much adore, he raised the question about what was the status of Eliyahu Navi's wife? Eliyahu Navi disappeared. He didn't die. He just vanished. Right? Elisha was trying to follow him, and then he turned away. Next thing he saw, just an empty cloak on the ground. Eliyahu Navi nowhere to be found. So he asked the Trumas HaDeshen, so was his wife now Mana? Was she still an Ashes Ish? So he says, well, what's the big deal? It happened. Whatever, she's dead now. Whatever happened, happened then. He says, because it's still possible that people Bizman HaZeh could get to the level of Eliyahu Navi. Rabbi Shua ben Levi was an Amora. He got to the level of Eliyahu Navi. So any single person now could get to that level. So let's say you and I become like Eliyahu Navi and we vanish. What's going to be the status of one's wife? So he deals with, is it a Misa? Is it that they're no longer available? So that's a Trumas HaDeshen. So he had a Talmud, the Leket Yoshar, and he said as well that one does not say a Shechianu during Sviras HaOmer. So there is basis in Halacha for this, but it's not widely accepted. So let's say a person had such a practice. Most people who don't say Shechianu, it's because they're just misinformed. They didn't know any better. But let's say you have a minug from your father and your father's father not to say Shechianu during Sviras HaOmer. Mm-hmm. It brings down from the Yechav HaDas that if one wants to abolish that minug, you don't even need a Hataras Nedarim. It's such a weak minug. There's so little basis of not saying a Shechianu during Sfira, you could just one day say, you know what? I'm going to start saying a Shechianu during Sfira. That's how little basis it has in Halacha, and that's the first misconception when it comes to Halacha. Okay, let's move to the next one. This one's not on the sheet here, but it's a very confusing Indian. We just finished Pesach a couple weeks ago, and people and women in particular are always asking, where could you buy from? Which places, which supermarkets, the places under the Vod, a Costco, a Target, a Food Town. So one person asked me, one lady had asked me, and I imagine other ladies think the same thing. Not every misconception everyone is confused by. But there's a group of people who think this way. So what happens after Pesach? You can't buy Chametz Shaval of a Pesach. If Chametz was owned by a Jew, you cannot buy from them until new products come in, until a fresh batch of Chametz that was made after Pesach come in. So on one of the questions I had in the ladies' chat, what? Exactly, unless they sold it. And the selling isn't so pashut either, because the distributors of all the bread are also owned by Jews. So even though, you know, the supermarkets that, let's say Gourmet Glot, sold their chametz, but they're getting produce or bread that was made by a distributor who was owned by a Jew who didn't sell the chametz. So that's a complicated topic, whether that's good or not good. But the person had asked me the following question. What?
Aren't you Kohen?
No, but it still was owned by a Jew. Once it's owned by a Jew, it has a chaloshem iser, an iser midarban. You can't fix it. So they asked me the whole long. The best is when there's like a whole long question, and then like the question has nothing to do with what all the background is. It reminds me, one of the questions on the man's chat was there's a whole thing about a person who was converted by a conservative rabbi and they got married and then this and that. I thought it was gonna be like a wild question as soon as Geiris, and the question was, should he cover his head with his talus when he davens? So I'm like, anyways. So this was a long, long question about the Food Town and the chametz and buying and selling. And then, could I buy plates from Food Town? So I'm like, scratching my head. I said, I don't want to make fun of anyone. Chas v'sham. I don't mean to. I'm just, it's fun kibitzing it all. Some of the halachas are complicated and confusing, and certainly if one doesn't learn in the yeshiva, it does get confusing. But the answer is there is no problem of buying non-chametz products from all these supermarkets. The issur of chametz shavar lePesach only applies to chametz, not non-chametz products. Right, that's a shiloh of how to use on Pesach, but there's no, that could be the basis of it. Maybe there's some chametz flour on it. Okay, that's fair enough. Okay, let's look at number two now. Number two, this, if I were making the list of like top misconceptions, this is very high up there. What's that? Do you have to have two separate brachos when it comes to shaloh manos? Many people, this even men thing. Now, many men think this is true as well, that you have to have two brachos when it comes to shalach manos. That is incorrect. You do not have to have two separate brachos. You need two manos, two items, but not two separate brachos. Now let's take a look in the Shulchan Aruch number two, just to see this inside. He says, "Chayv l'shloach l'chaveiro shtei manos basar, two amounts of basar." So what bracha do you say in basar? And what, let's say one's meat, one's chicken, what bracha do you say in each of them? Shakon both. So clearly from the Shulchan Aruch, you have two manos, basa, even though they have the same bracha, you fulfill the mitzvah of shalach manos. You need two manos, but not two brachos. Osha mine ochem, you could use other food as well, as it says in the pasuk, shenemar umishloach manos ish lirei'eihu. Now, there is a confusion about shloach manos. Why do people think this way? Because when it says shtei manos, if you take a look in the Shulchan Aruch, it says, and the Mishnah Berurah, they have to be two different manos, two different types. So there's a big question. Let's say I have two flavored chickens. Are two flavored chickens, do those qualify as two manos? Well, let's say I've got the same piece of chicken cooked the same exact seasoning, but there's white meat and there's dark meat. I won't eat white meat unless it's like fried. It's too dry for me. But dark meat and white meat are very different. So is that considered, are those considered two different manos or not? So, what? So there's some make a connection to borer. When it comes to lachas of borer, you want to separate dark meat and white meat. Those are considered shnei manos, dark meat and white meat. So some say the same thing should be true by shach manos. The dark meat and white meat should be two different manos. Others say no. Borer have different set of lachas than what's needed by shnei manos. But whatever the definitions being used for shnei manos for Purim is probably where the confusion came about as to why you need two brachos. And it could be two brachos also makes life easier. If you're told you need two brachos, then you don't get to the question, this chicken, that chicken, just get two brachos. Get a wine and get some bread, and then you'll be fine, no questioning. That's probably where it came from, but me'ikra din, there is no basis for having two manos. Now, I forgot to mention by Sphere, I'm sorry to go back for a second. I wanted to mention about the Indian of buying new things during Sphere. So, the same thing. There are poskim who say there's such a practice, such a minhag, not to buy new things. But Rav Chaim Kanievsky and the Chuvas Orlet Zion and Rav Yashiv all said there is no such minhag, and you're allowed to buy new things, you can move into new houses during Sphere. Again, there are some poskim, and Rav Nissen Karelitz and others say that, Rav Vosner say that one shouldn't buy things, but the overall practice is that one may buy things and even recite a Shechianu. Okay, so we discuss Sfira, we discuss plates that Avril of Pesach, we discuss Shnei Manos, Shnei Brachas by Shalach Manos. Now we started, I imagine you all know, we started Smichas Chavar this past week. We're learning Tevilas Kalim. So Tevilas Kalim, there are two very big misconceptions in the halachas of Tevilas Kalim. One is, we discussed this the other night, was something that touches the item or not. So a lot of times people think, if I have a keli, I didn't have a chance to put in the mikvah, if I just line the metal utensil, the metal basket, with some parchment paper or something, so this way the food doesn't touch the plate, the metal, that's completely fine. They think it's okay as long as it doesn't touch it. And that is incorrect. So let me explain where that comes from, why people have a misunderstanding, and what the halacha is. There is a halacha that what items require, which utensils require tevilas kalim, items used and touch food. So my plate, the food goes in my plate, so since it touches food, so then I need to put my plate in the mikvah to do tevilas kalim. That's the halacha. So even though that's a definition of it, it has to touch food as well. Let's say, for example, I have a can opener. Can openers don't require tevilas kalim because it doesn't touch the food. It might happen to touch it, but the ikar part is to open the can. It may touch some of the tuna fish you're opening up or whatever food, but it's not the ikar to touch the food. But the whole idea is any vessel or utensil that's meant to touch food, even though it's not at that time, but it's meant to touch food, it requires tevilas kalim. The fact that I line it in such a thing where currently it's not touching food, that doesn't help. Whenever the function is meant to be used with touching the food, then it does require tevilas kalim. It doesn't help by lining it. So that's a very important misconception, which many people think is actually the halacha. The other thing when it comes to tevilas kalim is the dispensation of using it one time before putting it to the mikvah. We mentioned this Thursday night as well. One time, there's one heter. What heter? What does that mean, one heter? You can't eat chametz one time on Pesach. You can't eat one time in Yom Kippur. It's either asur or mutter. What does it mean to do one time? So the idea here is because we all know aluminum pans. Aluminum pans, according to most poskim, don't require tevilas kalim. Why? But it's a one-time item. You use it one time, you throw it out. It's a one-time use. So too, if I use my fork one time, that should be allowed as well. But that's the misunderstanding. The reason why aluminum pans don't require tevilas kalim is because it's not a permanent kli. It's a temporary kli. The fact that it's disposable, the fact that it's used only one time, that indicates that it's disposable. But my fork is used multiple times. It's going to be hundreds or thousands of times. That, by definition, makes it a real kli, and therefore does require tefillas kelim.
If you reuse, let's say, tin pans or whatever, would they need to be tumbled or because?
Yes. So those who say, I think I have four rishonim who use it one, two, three, four times. My understanding is that once you wash an aluminum pan to reuse it a second time, that's already considered a second use, and then you would have to do tefillas kelim. But sometimes my wife lets her use make chicken, and then empty the chicken out, and then bake another the same chicken, like same recipe, but just another round of chicken. That to me is all considered one use. Or after you cook it, you put it back in the refrigerator, leftovers, have it for Monday night, Tuesday night, however long you're willing to eat the leftovers for, and then that's all considered one use.
So it's based on your personal usage of the item.
Can't really quantify it. It's common sense what's considered a one use, I think.
If you know that you use tin pans multiple times, do you have to total it before the first time you use it?
A very good question. Yes.
So what is the definition of disposable, though?
Disposable is something that people don't keep around for more than one. I mean, using one use loosely, but one
not
use.
Necessarily.
What do you mean?
I have a coffee cup. I happen to not like to throw it out and use a new one every single time I have something to drink.
Right.
So on a daily basis, I'll wash it out and I'll clean it out.
Correct.
I'll use it until the point where it starts to feel like it's
okay, so that would be not for you. You just made this, it's not no longer disposable.
So it's still a disposable. Nobody would say this is not a disposable cup.
Halacha would.
But why?
Because you're not disposing of it.
I still intend to dispose of it.
No, but you're using more than once. Disposable by definition of halacha.
Since when does disposable have the definition of only being used once?
Since halacha established that.
Where does it say in halacha that disposable means only using once?
This is what the poskim said. Take a look at this farm. Yeah, I don't have it in front of here, but that's what the halacha is. Take a look here at number three, Shulchan Aruch. Actually, it's really Ramah. Rama writes in number three, Aval harishon aser lishtamish bo, is referring to tefillas kelim. If the keli hadn't been used, hadn't been toveled yet, so using it one time, even rishon, even the first time is aser lishtamish bo l'tzarche suta. I can't even use it one time. Afil derech arai, just by happenstance, below tefillah, that's not allowed. But if you have an item that is only meant to be used just one time, the post can all point out. Take a look at this. One English sefer before us talks about this. You're using it just one, two, three times, that's considered one use. That's not called a kli. But once you, again, have in mind to use your cup, if it was made from aluminum or something, so then you use it multiple times, that you've just made this into a non-disposable cup and would have to put it into the mikvah.
I just made it into non-disposable.
Correct.
But I'm a Jew.
That's fine.
So it's like I just made it.
No, you didn't manufacture the cup, but you the use of it.
But the person who manufactured it only intended it to be.
That's okay. But they said that makshava that you have the ability
so
to change it. No, you didn't create it. The creator created it. You created the usage, not the actual
right.
cup.
And I thought the usage is what you just described as what makes it needing to be titled, not its creation.
You need two things. You need the creation of the item, the kli itself, the physical kli, and you need the intention as well. You even created the intention. You didn't create the kli.
You don't have both things in order to make it something that you need to title.
What do you mean?
The only thing you have is the manufacturer. Is the fact that I used it more than once, but the manufacturer only intended it to be used.
So that the halacha doesn't make a difference.
Rabbi Levin, I just a follow-up to Benjamin Spanish's question. That cup, if you just took that cup, the material of that cup, you wouldn't think to tevel that cup, even if you're going to use it more than one time, because aluminum to me is a more permanent kli. I mean, you can, use it multiple times, and it if you looked at it, you would say that needs to be tevel, but the status of that cup as the material that it was manufactured, does that change anything? Or is it the usage is the thing that makes the decision on whether or not something has to be
right. Cut? So the usage, for a great example, there's a big discussion about a Snapple bottle, a glass Snapple bottle, which has very durable, you could use for as long as you want. But most poskim assume that that's also called disposable because that's how people generally use it. There's some poskim who I'm machmir because the shita is maharil. I won't drink out of the glass bottle. I pour it into a cup, not because of the derech a person drinks. That's another inin, drinking from bottles, but just because of halacha of not drinking from glass. But many poskim say you're allowed to drink from the glass. That's disposable. It's very durable. Doesn't make a difference because the nature of people is to take the Snapple bottle and to throw it out.
So then if I would take that example, if I took that Snapple bottle, I drank out of the bottle, and then I filled it with water and I drank it, and then I put it down and said, oh, you know, tomorrow I'm going to also fill it with water. That would have to be tovel.
Exactly.
I'm
using
it 100%. Now as a kli that's
There's a famous discussion. We're going to go into, I'm not sure what point in Thursday night in Tfilas Kelim the halacha is, but they talk about a pickle jar. That's what Shlomo Zalman talks about. You have it. It's all one-time use. You take two out, you put it back in. Is that all considered one use? That's over 5 weeks you could have the pickle bottle. So the pickle jar. So that's a discussion how to define it. So we'll have to go into greater detail on Thursday night for this particular topic, but there's the basics.
Back then, we would more or less talk about the Yahrzeit candles, because the Yahrzeit candles, the old ones were made out of, not the tin cans, but they were made out of
glass, and then use it for food afterwards?
And people, you're supposed to throw it out afterwards, but if you went into a lot of the old-time homes, they had whole sets. Yep.
And say what would they use it for? For like cups to drink? Okay.
Korain.
Okay. So that would also be, I guess, an example. Yeah, they talk about using non-food items. If you, even if it was intended by the manufacturer for non-food purpose, but you want to use it for a food purpose, you now have changed the usage and would have to do a tevila on those items.
Would it help for the first time use to be marketed to someone? Use it because you're not owning it, but it has to be then an anju, right?
You have to mark it to an anju. Yeah. This is the Eitzah they talk about on Shabbos. It's a machlokas whether you could do Tevilas Kalim on Shabbos or not.
Right.
So those are 2 days in Shulchan Aruch where machmir not to do it. But let's say you're stuck. You have this kli, I don't know, and the guest brought it, and you can be insulted because you're not using it. So you can't go to the mikveh with it. So the Eitzah is you give it to an anju, and once an anju owns it, so then there's no requirement of Tevilas Kalim at that point. So there's another shaila on that point, however. The Mishnah in Beita says you can't do mekach u'memkar in Shabbos. Right. You can't buy and sell, you can't give gifts. How do you give a gift to a goy on Shabbos? It doesn't work. So they point out that if it's for tzarech mitzvah, now whatever tzarech mitzvah means, it could be to just make your guest happy. For tzarech mitzvah, you're allowed to do matana on Shabbos. Similarly, I've discussed this in the past, there's a... going off tangent now, but that's the nature of this shir today. It's just a list of different halachas. So there's a Gemara in Sukkah that talks about lulav, that you have to own the lulav. Lakachtem lachem, bayom arishon lachem, you have to own it, the Gemara says. Gemara says there are two other mitzvahs that you also have to own. Anyone know the other two mitzvahs? Matzah, right? It says matzah, and lulav is one I just mentioned, and then matzah is one of them, and challah. Pasuk says ariso sechem, you have to own the challah dough to perform hafrashas challah. So it says lachem by sukkis, by lulav it says ariso sechem, and then there's a gzer shava, it says lechem by challah, lechem by matzah, gzer shava, just like you have to own challah, you have to also own the matzah. So Sfasemis there on the spot in the Gemara in Sukkah says, so if you have to own it, so what do you do when you're a guest at someone's house? I didn't buy the matzah, he bought the matzah. Or even if you're a child at your in-laws or parents' house. So Sfasema says, people should be makna over. If you're the owner of the matzah, you should be makna and say, whoever gets whatever matzah you get, you become the owner to fulfill the din of lachem, that you own the matzah. So when should one do this? So can you do this on Shabbos? So they say, best to do it Erev Shabbos, but if not, on Shabbos or Yontif also, even though you can't normally give gifts on Yontif, the Tzorech Mitzvah, you're allowed to give a gift. So here as well, if there's a Tzorech Mitzvah for the Keli, you can be makna over to an Akum and do it. Someone actually had a good chap, this is a couple weeks ago, there's a shaila about being Tovel electronical coffee makers and stuff like that. So, he was choshesh for the shita that says it requires that these Keurig machines do require tefillah. And he didn't want to ruin it. So he wanted to know whether he could give it to Izzy. Now, Izzy owns it, the janitor, he's the guy, he owns it. Then it wouldn't require tefillas kelim anymore. So I said, yeah, you could certainly give him a gift. There wasn't Shabbos, so it was just give him as a gift. And you're just borrowing it. If it's a real deal, he's a lawyer. So he made a good deal. He says, am I allowed to make the deal through email? And he'll be masking through email. I said it's best probably in person to make a deal, make an agreement, shake hands on it, and then he'll own it, and then you and your house don't need a tefillah on it. That's a good etza.
Even that coffee maker like the Keurig as an example, it's all really plastic. The whole thing is plastic.
Right, so that's another shaila. There's apparently one metal thing that
pipes. Puncture.
Yeah, puncture.
Right.
So the OU, I believe, passing it does not require, that's my understanding.
That's
so this person was Machmir for the Shittas who said it does require, but Mikra, then to my understanding, which I don't know much about coffee, it doesn't require tevila.
What about store owners who happen to be ridden that sell you something that's good? You know it's going to be used. Is there any issue?
What do you mean, no, it's going to be used?
Let's say Mother's Day, they're selling you chocolates in a dish.
So that's again a different topic. But it's the issue of klei schar, which is merchandise. There is no obligation at all for the merchant to do tefillas kerem. Even placing it in wouldn't be a violation, because if there's no mitzvah, there's no violation. Now, should there be signs on when you take this home and you buy it, you should remove the food from the candy dish? Perhaps, but we'll wait for when we get to that to invite you into tefillas kerem. Let's go back now to the list of misconceptions.
He said doing it to a goy, giving it to a goy, let's say on Shabbos, the date I mentioned. We also mentioned Thursday night about giving it to a yid.
No, that's a different thing. That's not giving. That's if you go into a person's house and he wasn't told us kalim how to use the kalim.
No, it's
a different point. No, it's irresponsible. You can't use kalim that are owned by Jews. Even if you own it, I can't use it either. It's only if a goy owns it, then I'm allowed to use his kalim. Mm-hmm. So let's go to number four now. Number four, this is, I think people know this halacha more nowadays, but growing up, unfortunately, I saw this many times, not in my own home, but many other places, that you're allowed to have a non-Jew cook in your house for you. That people think is allowed, without turning on the fire. That is incorrect. Now, what's this based on? Well, one thing that you should be based on Amaratus, that's one. Number two is it could be based on a Shulchan Aruch in Hilchas Bishul Akum. If you look at number four, Shulchan Aruch writes that Yesh Misha Matir, they're those who permit Shvachel Shalanu, our maidservants, to cook. That's a mafurish Shulchan Aruch. However, Yesh Misha Oser, those who prohibit it, feel b'di'evet. Even if they cooked it retroactively, even in the b'di'evet, it would also still be Oser. So the two days. So one day it says it's allowed. Rama writes, u'b'di'evet, had it been done, Yesh Lismoch ha'divrei matirim, there though you could be makel on the divrei matirim. And then he writes, not only b'di'evet, v'afilu l'chadchila nogin, the practice is l'hakel b'beit Yisrael. If it's in the Jew's home, you could be makel by shvachos. Sh'ashvachos v'avadim mivashim b'beit Yisrael. That's how they cook. Ki i'efshar shalo yechta echad mibnei ha'bayis ma'at. Because they were busy cooking soup all day long. It's impossible that they had very different types of ovens back there. They had a fire on the bottom and they stoked the coals to keep it going. It wasn't like you just turn on the fire, that's it. So it's impossible while they're cooking all day long, not one Jew, someone in the family must have stoked the coals a little bit, tried to make it a little bigger. So there is some level of involvement of the Jew in terms of the process of creating the fire. That was back then, says the Ramah. Nowadays, no one's like adjusting the fire when you're going in and out. You turn the fire on and then zehu. So if the goy turned on the fire, he cooked from beginning to end, or she cooked from beginning to end, that would be a blatant violation of Bishul Akum. Now, even in the kulas of the shvachos, even in the yesh misha matir of the Shulchan Aruch who permit it, there's a taz and shach says, what type of shivcha are we talking about? It's talking about a shivcha that you own. That you like own, like a shifcha kananis, that type of shifcha kananis. Then you own her, and then she could cook for you according to that one day. But a person, a shifcha who you just hire, you pay to work there, that's not a shifcha, and that everybody agrees is not allowed. There happen to be some kulas which I'm not going to go into right now, but the accepted practice is that a shifcha should not be cooking, any housekeeper should not be cooking for you, and if she were to do that, the food would be usher to eat. And possibly the kalim as well. There's 2 days in Shulchan Aruch, whether the kalim that go through Bishul Akum, whether those require Haggalah or not. Not for now, but that's a very important area of misconceptions.
Well, that's far too even more. It's not just lighting the fire.
Right there, yeah. So let's do a number five. Growing up, I'm not sure what happened in your homes. I don't think it's practiced anymore. But growing up, I used to see in the different flower pots in my house, like knives and forks and spoons stuck in them. So people used to think if you let it grow in the ground, it's going to become kosher. If it you use the wrong utensil, the milchiks, the fleishiks, that is incorrect. But I love my mom and all, my father, they're both great and everything like that. My father, hopefully he's not listening to this shiur. He does listen to shiurim often. But he wasn't involved in the kitchen. My mom doesn't listen to my shiurim. So what's, and it's not in my home, it happened in many homes. So no need to raise your hands, but it happened. So what's the idea, what's the basis, why do people think it's okay to do this? Because there is a halacha called ni'itza. The Shulchan Aruch says in number 5, if you have a sakin yashan, an old knife, ben gadol, ben katan, whether it's big, whether it's small, ha'nikach me'ovikacham, that you bought from an non-Jew, In bol the shamish betonin. If you want to use it in cold food, im ein bogumos, if there are no holes, it's not serrated, it's a very clean, smooth knife. No ata sar pamim bekarka kasha. You could thrust it in the ground 10 times in 10 different places, very hard ground, and that cleans it. Niitza could clean food, the residue on the knife. It doesn't kasher. It doesn't change from treif to non-treif. It could only clean residue. So if you're using it for a cold item, so then no bleos, no issur is getting extracted from the knife. That's fine. It's not a kosher knife. But for cold, you could use it if it's clean with ne'itza. But if you want to use it for hot, you have to do hagala. That's where this, I assume, this misconception came from. I'll do three more. I'll run through it quickly. One is a different area of halacha now when it comes to lulav and esog when it came to sukkis. The halacha is people think, what happens to your esog if the pitum falls off? Now you guys are scared to answer, right? Depends who you ask.
Depends who you
ask. First day, last day.
Every single time they ask him. And he said, I told you this last year. Be careful, don't drop your head throat. But he said that after the first day, okay.
Uh-huh.
Just all this, I was very fortunate not to break it before.
Okay. So listen to this. Listen to what the Shulchan Aruch writes here. This is Taf Resh Mem Ches in Hilchas Lulav, Siv Zayin. Shulchan Aruch writes, Nitel Dado, which is the pitom, the Hu Arosh Hakat, and the small little head of it, Sheshoshanto, the little flower bow, it's possible. That's what it's possible. So what's the definition of a Shoshan and a Dad? So it says the Shulchan Aruch, the Mishbur rather says, Hu Ha'ech Sha'arosh Esrog, Kmo Chod Hadad, the Tacha Besocha Shoshanto Alav. There's a little branch, whatever you call it, and then the flower on top, that's a pitom. This is a magnified picture of the pitom. Okay? So he says, it's not the top itself, the flower, it's also part of the stick. So let's say just the flower part falls off, but the stick is still there, that actually is acceptable. The Rama writes, there are those who are ma'achmir im nitla shoshanta, if even this the circle thing came off, the hainu masha anu korm ha-pitom, the pitom of the pitom fell off, and tov la-achmir, it's best to be ma'achmir if you're able to. But in terms of psul, it's only possible if the entire stick came off as well, along with the pitom. So that people think, they have different pictures here in the deer shoe. But if just the circle point part fell off, it's completely fine. There's room to machmir if you want to buy another esrog from Ezra. But if you don't want to spend a lot, or you don't have any other options, if just a circle part fell off, it's fine. But only if the stick part fell off would that be considered puzzle. The whole thing. Where almost some say it has to be like a hole in the esrog itself. Wow. So it's a lot more makel than you would imagine.
But the problem is that there was a certain type of min, a certain type of species of esrog that had an eighth and a shoshanta. But nowadays, the esrog itself,
this different,
the
right.
Pitum is really part of the esrog.
Correct.
Itself.
You have different types. Sometimes the stick holding up the pitum, sometimes it's brown, sometimes it's yellow. If it's yellow that gets there, so then I'm not sure what the din would be at that point. It's an interesting question. I don't know. That's a fair point. Now, one last thing, Rabbi Richman was overlooking my shoulder before, which he was allowed to. He was looking at my marmakomos here. He was taking a look at the topic. He added one thing to the list. He said people, when they go to a restaurant, let's say a Chinese restaurant, and they go wash. He's like, I don't know why they're washing in a Chinese restaurant. They don't serve you bread, but they go wash, and there's like a tiny little piece of bread there. So people think you should, firstly, whenever you have bread, the halacha is you wash your hands. But you don't say the bracha of netilas yadayim unless you're having a kezias of it. So you wash, but you don't say a bracha. Number two is you shouldn't be benching afterwards either if all you had was that little piece of bread. Now, there's a discussion where Moshe Feinstein about a person going to a wedding and he has Passover but kissing and he have all the food gets added up, and how do you define how much food you ate? It becomes a big meal even though you didn't have any bread because the crackers you had at the table added up to the... So there can be perhaps some room to even bench in those cases, but people think having a little piece of bread is enough to wash and say bracha on, and also to bench. I'll finish with one last piece here, which it's not so fair for me to say, but I'm going to say it anyways. Could get myself in trouble, not too much trouble, but people think that one should wash. Oh, yeah.
Just about the little piece of bread. Can you make the bracha of the motzi standing up there? and not sitting down at your table?
Yeah, you can. It's best to sit down and eat it because you're kovei suda and you should be sitting down when eating. The Gemara in Kedushin says a person is walking in the street and he's eating, it's like a kelv, he's pasul edus, but that doesn't really apply to a restaurant because he's not bashuk. He's not walking around eating. And that's a shaila. Then how do you eat at any single kiddush? People, there's no chairs at Kedushim, so we don't assume that way. And this mamish person is walking down Central Avenue chewing his gum, which I think is not a nice thing to do. But in our house, my wife is very makbid, no walking outside, chewing gum. But if your guy is like eating a piece of pizza while he's walking, he's eating a piece of cake, and that's what we're talking about. At a kiddush or at a restaurant, that's not what we're talking about. It's certainly best to be kovei suda, sitting down like a mensch. The last thing is washing on pizza or not. So we all know the Rav Moshe said that pizza was only a snack, and if you have one slice, it's a mizonah. So if you have two, it's already kovei suda. Many poskim say that even a small piece of pizza is considered bread because no one eats pizza as snacks anymore. People eat it as a meal. Therefore, I know some have gotten psukim that they could have four pieces of slice and they're not full still, and they don't have to wash in that. I've been told that by some people here in this room. But the minhag, from what I was speaking to the various poskim, pizza bezmazeh is considered bread, and even for a small piece of it, you would have to say hamotzi. So I'll leave you with that. And Mirtz Hashem, we should no longer have any misconceptions and just follow the halacha.
Please talk about that. If a person...
Let me just...